In this episode, we are going to talk to Mr. Jason Patton from Fire Department Coffee. We're going to talk about the crazy videos he's making online that I'm sure all of you have seen, where he green screens himself into these emergency rescue TV shows and just roasts how they're responding to these scenes. But also, we'll talk about how he has a very unique way of interjecting humor into what would otherwise be considered serious training topics, and how you, as safety professionals, can learn from this as well. So get ready to laugh a little and learn a lot in this episode. All right, everybody, before we get into today's topic, I want to remind everybody, if your business is reopening after any kind of closure due to COVID, or you've continued to remain open, but you're struggling with how to mark your facilities to ensure physical distancing and relay important information about safety and health as it relates to COVID, I want you to go visit our friends over at Mighty Line Floor Tape. Mighty Line has some great products for you to mark your floors, whether it be the stand here, the 6 feet distancing, or just floor tape to denote lanes of travel. They have everything you need to mark your facility. So hit the link in the show notes, visit our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. They are incredible partners in safety. I can't thank them enough for their support of the podcast. Again, Mighty Line Tape for all of your floor marking needs. All right, everybody, we are here with Jason Patton, VP at Fire Department Coffee. So Jason, welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast.
Thank you so much, Blaine. I appreciate it.
No problem. Now, Jason, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and if you start with it was a dark and stormy night, I'm just going to die, but a little bit about you and how you got to this point in your career.
I would never start with a dark and stormy night. I'd be like, I was in the shower, lathering my armpits. roughly 14 years ago, 15 years ago, I was working as a mechanic. A buddy of mine came to me and he said, hey, I just went to EMT school. You should try it out. And I thought to myself, I'm a horrible mechanic and I shouldn't do this any longer. So I went to EMT school. Loved it, man. The medical field was so fascinating to me. In fact, when I was going through mechanic school, I loved it. But the thing that I loved the most was the we went through like an electrical portion and everyone hated it. And I loved it because it was just so cool. Figure out how electricity flows, so on and so forth. So when I went to EMT school, I was just completely blown away and fascinated with the way the human body works. And went to that, and it was literally history from there. I then went to medic school and then into fire school. And now I'm 15 years in, in June it'll be 15 years of being a firefighter paramedic. So it's super exciting.
Well, thank you so much for your service to our community. You know, that's exciting. I myself started in the fire service immediately, almost very quickly, went into prevention and education, which kind of led me down to this private sector career path of safety. So a lot of podcast listeners, a lot of, you know, my friends today and colleagues came out of the fire service, EMT, paramedic background. So I think that industry produces a lot of great safety professionals. And I'm just blessed that I get to talk to those folks every day. So how I noticed you, well, two things. Fire Department Coffee, incredible. Go out and get some, folks. No affiliation, by the way, whatsoever. Let's get that out of the way. Just two pros talking here. But Fire Department Coffee, how did that come about? And we'll talk a little bit about Fire Department Coffee.
Yeah, so I created about 4 years ago, I created something called Fire Department Chronicles. So I make funny videos for firefighters and EMTs and paramedics, pretty much any first responder. And I started creating these videos, and probably about 6 months in, I get a message from Luke Schneider, who's the CEO of Fire Department Coffee. And he's like, hey man, really love to work with you. The reason that came up was we were about to get hit by a hurricane. I live in Florida, and they were putting 30 of us in one station. And I put a video out saying that Cafe Bustelo was the only thing that was going to stop us from murdering each other. Because I tell you, you put a bunch of uncaffeinated guys together, it's not going to be good. So he messaged me. He's like, hey, man, I'd love you to try our coffee. So he, I was like, let me try a bag before I start representing anything. He sent me a 6-pound bag of this stuff, and it's incredible. Like, the stronger you made, the stronger I made it, the better it tasted, which is the opposite of most coffees. And it was just pretty much poetic synergy. God, I hate using the word synergy, but it was a great relationship from there, and it's you know, history since.
Great coffee. I've had the spirit infused is really great. A crisp morning out at the campsite with the RV, fantastic. And I love the whole beans myself. I like grinding it fresh at home. So
yeah, most people I suggest grind your own. Yeah, grind your own. It's a little. It's I mean, it's fresh either way, but you're definitely gonna get that fresh flavor. Plus, grind it to whatever whatever roast you want. I mean, because there actually is different types. So yeah, I definitely always say go with the whole bean.
Yeah, sometimes I mix it up. I'm such a coffee nerd. I'll mix it up and do a French press. So you do need a little coarser ground for a French press than you would for drip and stuff. So So you mentioned Fire Department Chronicles. You still do Fire Department Chronicles. You're still making all these videos, right?
Yes, sir. Yep, still doing it.
I saw a series of them, or I started seeing a series of them, that just, I finally smacked the table and I said, yes, finally somebody is calling these bozos out. And that is, and this is why I cannot watch any of these shows. It's you've started putting yourself in the scenes of some of these shows, these like rescue shows, right?
Yep.
You green screen yourself in. What? This is so funny. What has been your experience of, you know, since doing that?
It's actually, so I did reviews of these videos for about 6 months, and I would pull the videos, pull what they were doing in there, and you know, I saw some good success from it. And legitimately, I was sitting around my house about 3 weeks ago or a month ago. I was like, you know what? Screw it, man. I'm tired of reviewing. I'm just going to put myself in there and say like what people would actually say on these calls. And it exploded. Like, it's just been such a cool experience. Because, look, I'll be the first to say that if they made a show that was strictly based on the things that actually happened in firefighting, it would be exciting. Very rarely, you know, like we do some very cool stuff, but, you know, for the most part, you know, we handle calls very quickly. We handle them with very little drama because that's what we're paid to do. So it wouldn't be extremely exciting, but, you know, they make these shows to, you know, over dramatize the stuff and make it fun for people. But the stuff they do is absolutely unrealistic in every way, shape, or form. So it is not meant for firefighters. So I just figured I'd make the firefighter version of it. What would really happen when someone says, "Go get me the jaws of life"? Everyone on that scene, no matter what is going on, is going to turn around and go, "What the hell did you just say?" Because no one says jaws of life, man. But right. People have loved it. It's been really exciting.
So do you think that, and I know this is going to get a little somewhat serious, but I think it's an important, it's a question I've always had. Do you think that that portrayal of that our profession, there's some risk to the general public having this perception of, you know, wild risk takers, not really knowing what to do? Because if you think about it, you watch some of these shows, and this is the way I've thought about it. It boils down to, you know what? They showed up and there was something that happened that they didn't expect and they literally didn't know what to do and they winged it. They literally were like, let's try this. And there's like somebody pinned under there. It's like, do you think that there's a risk to the public of this perception of, you know, our profession?
I think what happens is you look at this kind of stuff and it's very difficult to put it into a very, you know, black and white, like, is it good? Is it bad? Because there is an amount of truth that, you know, we train for X and we train for Y and we train for Z, but sometimes Q happens, you know, and you're like, okay, what do I do here? So there is some truth to that. But what aggravates me, what I think does a huge disservice is two things. One, they over-dramatize the things on calls. They make us look like we argue on calls. They make it, the Station 19 is notorious for everyone has sex in the stations. I mean, they are just giant orgies every single shift. And I'm like, what are you? They're all taking showers together. They're changing in the same. I'm like, if I was ever half naked in a locker room with another woman, I would be fired immediately. Like HR would come in and go, guess what? Pack your stuff. You're leaving. Like that kind of stuff doesn't happen. But, you know, the other thing that they tend to do is they show like outrageously unsafe acts. Like a guy running into there was one where this firefighter's like, I'm going in by myself because this is the way we do things. And he runs in without a mask, without anything, and goes and quote unquote saves somebody. Like, I get it. People want to be heroes. You know, if I had to sacrifice my life to save another person, I would do it without a heart, you know, without even thinking twice. I would do it because that's what I'm paid to do. That is what I signed up to do, is to put other lives above my own. But if a house is on fire, they show this all the time, house on fire, they run through the flames to get to the person with no bunker gear on. That you would make it 3 feet into that door and be dead. Like that's how that one goes. So yeah. I understand what they're trying to do. I understand they're trying to show the heroic side of stuff, but we're not just a bunch of non-thinking mongrels that say like fire bad, run inside, I'm better. Like we're like, okay, you know, we do that, the whole like risk reward analysis, and you know, not wearing gear into a fire where everything's on fire and the person's sitting right next to the flames, that risk reward, not exactly going to work out very well. So,
yeah. And we've heard this a lot where, you know, there's a difference between talking about a rescue and a recovery.
Yes.
Right. And the approach.
Yes.
So yeah. And to be fair, and I think you started off, you know, saying it and you were very fair about it, is they're in the business of entertaining us.
Yeah.
And not so much educating us about the industry. But, and I think that's what makes it hard for people like us to, you know, watch these things and just take it seriously.
Yeah.
And I say my profession has almost ruined
100%.
You know, when looking at entertainment now.
Well, that's like if I went into the military and learned anything about the military, or I went into like forensic analysis of crime scenes, which I don't really have to go too deep into that to know that everything that they're displaying on TV is complete crap. But I can't imagine what it's like to be, you know, a forensic analysis. Yeah, because I know it takes 8 months for them to crack a case if it's like inside of a computer. But then they're like, oh, yeah, well, the guy's last name is Williams and he was born in 1972. and it shows that he likes the color green. It's got to be Green Williams 72. Like, and that's it. Like, and they're in the computer. So, yeah. I can't imagine.
It would almost be better if they said, if somebody just broke the screen, right, and just looked at the camera and went, in the interest of time, we're going to pretend we can get this analysis done in like 5 minutes.
There was a move of, I forget what show it was. I can't remember. I want to say it was like, I think it was the, to call, or not to call Matt D, what was the show? Super Troopers 2, where the guy was like, hey, you know, zoom in, or hey, can you zoom in? And the guy grabs the whole computer and brings it to his face. He's like, yeah, there you go, zoom. It doesn't work like that. Like, I mean, it's the truth, man. So
that's funny. So let's make the leap from, you know, what you're talking about and why you, and maybe that helps. Why did you decide to do it? Like, I know you did the reviews and I watched those videos, and the green screen, hands down, it's not just entertaining. I laugh so hard because I'm like, I've had that conversation, or oh my God, I've been on a scene like that. Why is it important for you to do this? Why, what compelled you to do it?
I think laughter, man. Like, I just think laughter is the best thing for anybody at all times, you know? And I think that finding humor in any situation, whether it is a very bad situation or an amazing situation, is so important. You know, people spend their entire lives looking for silver linings of things. And I think if you can genuinely find entertainment without like hurting someone else, like, I think it's incredible. Like, I don't ever make fun of the actors and I don't make fun of the directors. In reality, I'm not even really making fun of the writers. I'm just making fun of the situations that people have absolutely no clue what they're talking about. And I think that they're doing a good job for what they want to do, but I also want to add a little bit of an entertainment value to what's going on around them. It's just so important at all times for people to truly find some kind of humor in their lives. Because, man, let me tell you, especially in the last year, I think everyone can relate to this. It's been a crap show. And it just seems like people are more driven to negativity and anger. Especially with social media is so good at continuing that thought process, because information or misinformation is so easily found these days. I think if we can all take a step back and just laugh, man, the world will be such a better place.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And we used to, I will say, I can relate to this. When I first got into the fire service, I was very idealistic, very young and idealistic. And reality hits you real quick. And not to be morbid, but all the training and preparation in the world, you got to see your first dead body. You got to go into your first fire. You have to experience it to really figure out if this is something that you're going to be able to do.
Yeah.
And it's not always fun and it's not always pretty. But one thing that struck me, and it struck me weird at first, is when after a really bad call, we get back to the firehouse and everybody was kind of cracking a joke here and there and going, hey, what the heck were you doing with the, you know, and making fun of each other. And it dawned on me that was therapeutic, that laughter, if you weren't laughing, you're probably going to cry.
Yep.
And I know you've spoken about this and you've done some videos about this, you know, about just, you know, depression, especially in this profession. But you're right. Laughter, you know, finding a way to laugh at yourself and to, you know, kind of make fun of each other a little bit. And it's just there. It was therapeutic. And I didn't see it that way at first. It really surprised me in a good way. And now I hear terms like, you know, fire department humor, firehouse humor. And I'm like, oh, crap, I know what that is.
Yeah, I got to tell you, dark humor is probably, and people, unfortunately, dark humor in some senses has gotten a very bad name behind it, because unfortunately, some people take it a little too far. But dark humor in general is a lot of times related to things that would be considered something that most people could not laugh about. But I think it is absolutely by far one of the most therapeutic things that you can do. Because like you said, you get back from a fire, man. You just saw someone baked. You just saw something that no human should ever see. Because I don't know if we're even meant to see those things, you know? I don't know what our original processing abilities were from birth and whatever, you know, everyone wants to believe the universe or God created everything. But I don't know if that's something you should see. So a lot of people don't know how to process it. You know, I always compare it to anything you do at first, right? The first time you drive a car, it's absolutely terrifying. You're going really slow. But then, you know, a year later, you're ripping around corners. You understand how to handle things properly. You've created the understanding of the way the vehicle works, the way you work, the way you're getting ready for any interactions that are going to happen. That's exactly what happens in these situations. Somebody sees their first dead body. They've never seen a dead body before in person. They're not used to the smells, you know, all the things that people have to interact with when you see these things. So they don't know how to process it. So it's very overwhelming. So for a lot of us, the guy who's seen it 1,000 times is like, oh man, yeah, that was weird, bro. Did you see they were wearing a red shirt? Like, who wears a red shirt these days, man? Like, and then you're like, ah, yeah, red shirts. Yeah. And then you're able to just kind of step back from like the absolutely overwhelming process of, holy crap, that person's dead. Were they, what was their last thought process? What were they doing? Are they upset they're dead? Like, you know, and you're able to kind of pull back, gain a little humanity to what's happening, and it helps you in the long run versus, you know, and it's either that approach for a lot of people, or the other side is people say, like, you know, what everyone has heard somebody say at some point in time, this is what we see, rookie. All right. You need to deal with it or you're not in the business. Like, all right, I'm going to go drink.
Right. You're going to go with the unhealthy way of dealing with this stuff.
Versus just, you know, weaning somebody into it. Again, you don't take your toddler at 8 months old and stand them on their feet and let them face plant and then go get up and then keep standing them on their feet. You know, you let them learn how to crawl. Then they learn how to stumble. Then they learn how to walk and run and so on and so forth. and that's the way you have to treat mental health or any of these situations. You say, hey, man, you okay? Or you say, hey, this is normal, bro. You need to talk about it? No. Hey, by the way, that guy's red shirt was really ridiculous. He was wearing a Mickey Mouse thing, like, oh, and then you move on. You know what I'm saying?
And, you know, my friends in the military, you know, are the same way. Some of the funniest people I've ever met, you know, firefighters, paramedics, and military folks, law enforcement. I mean, I think there's something to what you just said, that it stems from this therapy, this therapeutic way of processing stuff that people should just not be seeing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there, like you said, there is this dark side to it. The flip side to that coin is we have a lot of brothers and sisters out there that are struggling in silence with this. So I appreciate the work you do to raise awareness for the mental health issues that face a lot of Americans today. So I've seen those videos, and keep it up, man. It's good work.
I appreciate it.
So what can we do as safety professionals, you know, switching gears a little bit, making a little transition, but, you know, from what we just talked about, and like, how can we better prepare and train safety professionals for things they may see? I mean, personally, unfortunately, through my career, not in the fire service, just as a safety professional in the private sector, you know, 5 fatalities. I've seen, you know, all kinds of stuff, amputation of a part of a hand, you know, in my background, luckily, you know, I can process that stuff. But when we're saying to a group of factory workers, hey, who wants to volunteer to be on the first aid team? And it's a heavy industrial site. Some of the injuries they're going to see, you know, how can we kind of bring some realistic expectations and training to something like that to these folks?
So two things. One, I want to tell you a quick story about a call that I went on that I think you'll appreciate. And then two, I'll address that part. So, well, I go on this call, man. I arrive on scene. It's a warehouse. They deal with steel. They do steel pressing, stuff like that. And we go there for a guy who cut his hand. And the way this came in was this guy's hand was missing. So we're blazing in there. We run in, and the guy's like, it's a laceration on his forearm. And we're like, all right, whatever. So we're like, you're good, bro. We like patch him up, you know, give him a little morphine because he's hurting. And as we're in the rescue, we hear people screaming. I'm like, what is going on right now? And I open up the door, like, we got another one. I'm like, what do you mean you have another one? While we are there, a guy put his gloves on because the other guy cut his hand. He put his gloves on to be safe and was feeding steel sheets into a press, and they sucked his hand in and crushed like 4 of his fingers, or 3 of his fingers, right? So this guy is the calmest dude I've ever met. Like, I mean, his fingers are crushed. He's probably, I want to say he lost 2 of them, but his fingers are crushed. And he's like, ah, man, this day's not going very well, is it? I'm like, like, I ended up starting an IV and I'll give him some morphine right there. Like, we got him to the hospital. And the only thing I could think of is like, HR is going to have a nightmare tomorrow. So like, just bad, man. So I own a comedy CPR company. It's called Patented Comedy CPR. I teach people how to do CPR, first aid, Narcan training, all that stuff. And it's all through comedy, stand-up comedy, everything. So I started teaching CPR about 8 years ago. And I go into the classes and I'm teaching people, and I just naturally like to interject humor into things. So I really, really, I found very quickly that if I walked in there and within the first 30 seconds busted out a joke, it removed the stigma from the room. Because people immediately, when they go in there, it's a stale environment. They're like, oh, God, like, we're going to learn about saving lives. What happens? You know, the number one reason why people don't want to do CPR or help someone in first aid is fear. That's the number one reason. They're afraid they're going to make the situation worse, which is one of the first things I address. It is almost impossible to make a 911 emergency worse. Like, you really got to work for it hard, man. So, but interjecting humor, anything, even if it's a picture, you open up with a picture of a goat flying through the sky, you know, like that is one of the first things that you can do with people to really break the staleness and the way people picture emergencies. Because again, all they know is the things they've seen on TV. and they think that every arterial bleed is going to end in death. They think that every person that, you know, gets their arm cut is going to get an infection from the steel that came down from, you know, something, you know, like every, that they've seen House way too many times. So like they, you know,
right.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, but like finding a humanity, B, you know, bringing as much awareness to the fact that a lot of times it's, if it's bleeding, direct pressure and talking to someone, those are the two biggest things you can do. Just put direct pressure on it and then say, hey man, it's going to be okay. The other thing I tell people is make sure that whatever's coming out of your mouth is matching your face. So you'll be like, hey man, everything's going to be okay, versus dry heaving in the process. Like, hey man, like you're going to be okay. Like you can't do that. So, you know, I think those are the big things that you can do with people is just remember that they've never seen this before. They don't know what it's like to see someone with an arm cut, and just reminding them that, you know, if you're not if you can't deal with blood, then be the 911 caller. If you are good with blood, then just, you know, talk to them, do direct pressure, but try to remove as much fear as possible. And humor, dude, humor is so good for that. Make them associate the memory of putting a tourniquet on with humor, and they won't find the situation funny, but they will have less fear walking into it, because they're going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right, man. You made that joke about high and tight will do them right, you know? And like, you know, like, yeah, high and tight will do them right. Like, you're going to be good, buddy. So like that a lot of times seems to help.
Great stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. I know a buddy of mine, Sean Rafferty, he does a lot of the active shooter stuff, right? Training. He's a security expert.
Yeah.
And has that background. And, you know, he's one of the funniest guys I know as well. And he's going to listen to this and he's just going to be laughing because he knows what I'm talking about. When he delivers some training, and I've been in some training he's delivered and stuff, you know, he was really good at doing that as well, of breaking down that sort of like, hey, you know how you see in the movies, you know, the thing is, yeah, that's not going to happen. No,
yeah.
Bullets go right through the door. You know, it's like, so he tells you like, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be, I mean, people are shooting at you. You, yeah. What do you think you're going to do? Right. So it's okay. But I loved what you said of your words matching your face. Oh my God. I have been mortified on being on a scene where somebody's like, you're going to be fine. And they're yelling and screaming. And I'm like, it doesn't sound like or look like it.
Are you going to be fine? Like,
right.
I just, again, it's the first like 10 seconds of an emergency that's the most chaotic, and we're, you know, so you just expect it. Like you said, like, dude, this is going to be a crap show. Take 2 seconds, close your eyes, take a breath, like close your eyes, take a breath, look away, and then come back to the situation. Dude, I many times have I, and this is what not a lot of people do, but I have found that over my years of being a first responder, this has helped me. I show up on a scene, and unless I'm the first person there and I have to touch the patient, I don't touch the patient. I let someone else touch them, and I sit back and I watch for 10 seconds. And it lets me gain a much greater understanding of what's going on around me. And then I'm able to fix the situation much faster versus jumping in and immersing myself in a screaming patient. And then obviously getting involved in that too, because emotionally, humanistically, we want to attach to people. We want to share feelings. So I'm going to want to be hysterical with them versus just sitting back and going, all right, like what exactly happened here? And then approaching it from there.
Yeah. That also instills a sense of confidence in most, not all, because, you know, you always have those one-offs, but
yeah.
It does. When you're calm, others seem to be calm. I remember traveling with my family in the RV, dragging that thing on the highway through Tennessee. And we saw a motorcycle accident.
Jeez.
This guy, no helmet, on the highway. He ended up between the left lane and the concrete wall. And when he started to wobble, and I said to my wife, I said, that guy's going down. And he did, went right over the handlebars, and his head struck the concrete wall. We hit the brakes, we get out. I said to my son, I always had this little trauma bag in the back of the car. I say, hey, grab my red bag. He hands it to me from the back seat. I get out. Somebody else had shown up to help, and I said, are you trained in first aid CPR? He said, yeah, I've got first aid CPR training. And I said, okay. We started putting a bandage to stop the bleeding. I said, who's calling 911? I'm looking around. It was like, you don't forget these things, right? It was drilled into me. It was just like, who's calling 911? I was in an unfamiliar place. I didn't know anything about the area. We were right by an exit. I said, what's this exit? Do you know this exit? She said, yeah, I'm from here. I said to the guys that were riding with him, I said, to block the traffic. People are going on the shoulder to get off this exit to get around us.
Jeez.
I said, tell the medic, come up the exit. We're going to block the traffic. And then she was like, really? I said, yes, trust me. They're never going to get here. Just tell them to come up the exit. We're going to block the traffic. And sure enough, they did. But it was this, when I went to leave, I said, look, I got to get my family off the highway here. I've got my camper and we're stuck right here. And once that medic gets here and the engine crew shows up, they're going to block this whole road. I said, I got to pull ahead a little. And the guy, he said to me, he goes, don't leave. Can you stay in? And I was like, look, you're in good hands. You've got this. And look, he's worried about his bike. You tell him his bike is okay. Tell him you've got his motorcycle and it's doing fine. Just keep him calm.
Yeah.
But it dawned on me later that when you have two or three folks, like you said, that are calm, they're confident, and they're talking to them like people, like humans, like, you know, not all clinical. That others tend to kind of fall into that sort of that mentality, right? And this sort of kind of put them at ease. And it's easier to ask people to do things for you other than a scene that where everything's chaotic and everybody's screaming and nobody's in control.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But that's it. Like just talking to someone, just taking 2 seconds to talk to someone, looking them in the eyes, huge. Like, hey man, listen, I know this is crazy, but you're going to be fine. Like, we're going to take care of it. Like that, I've seen people go from a million miles an hour to two and just being like, all right, cool. Because that's all they want to see. They want to see confidence because exactly what you said, there's chaos, so everyone's chaotic. Let's show them confidence in chaos. And that's every war movie you ever see where the person's like, oh my God, everyone's shooting. And the lieutenant comes over and like the sergeant like grabs him and goes, hey, we're going to be good. And they're like, yeah, we're going to be good. And then, you know, everything's great from there. So like that's exactly how that goes. So.
Yeah. And that's also a benefit of, and when I did CPR first aid training, albeit clearly not as funny as yours. And so I'll just get that out of the way. But I definitely said, you know, one of the best things you can do for people that are standing around and, you know, that are like, don't know what to do, give them a job.
Yeah.
Just look at them and go, you do me a favor, go stand out front. And when you see the medic, you know, wave them down, bring them in that front door. Hey, you, could you do me a
favor? Yes.
Give them something to focus on because one, they feel powerless. They don't know what to do. So that freaks them out. But if you give them a task, mm-hmm. you know, you can keep people busy.
100%, dude. Yeah. What are the idle hands of the devil's play shop or whatever it's called? Workshop.
Yeah.
100%. My honest to God, you know, because I think I truly enjoy educating people through humor. You know, I've taught probably, you know, 500 CPR classes, if not more. And my end goal, honest to God, is at some point in time, I'd love to use my platform to, once COVID restrictions are over, I want to pack an auditorium. I want to pack an auditorium because I've done a few stand-up comedy CPR classes at local comedy places, but I want to pack an auditorium and teach, you know, 5,000 people how to do CPR all at once and make it like a night out. So like people go, they're like, hey, let's go laugh for, cause it's an hour and a half show. Like you're going to laugh for an hour and a half and you're going to learn how to save lives all in an hour and a half. And it's legitimately, it's a stand-up comedy show. And I think that would be so beneficial to the world because lay rescuer CPR is what saves lives.
Yes.
I want to, you know, high five ourselves all we want, but it's the facts are that if we show up and no one's done CPR, I believe it's less than 5%. They like to boost the numbers to 10%, but I'm yet to see that one. So, but I definitely, I think that teaching people through comedy in that type of setting would kill it, man. And then you just have, you know, they walk out of the auditorium and there's a bunch of, you know, we got 50 guys set up with mannequins and everyone's just practicing, laughing, having a good time and learning how to do CPR. I think that's the best way to approach it.
Yeah, that would be incredible. And I would definitely show up to that one. Just from the sheer entertainment value and to be able to experience something like that. Because you don't typically think of those two together.
No.
But, you know, who says something like this that we all should learn has to be dry and like old school, like, you know, you could kill somebody. You need to learn this, you know, and it's like, oh my God, why are you yelling at me?
Dude, I gotta tell you this story. I went and taught CPR at this place, right? So I go teach CPR at this place. We end the class, everyone's laughing. We had such a good time. And this lady walks up and goes, "Listen, I want you to know, this is a school." And the lady goes, "I want you to know that this was so refreshing." She goes, "The last person that came," and I am not touting myself at all. I just think it was the utter two opposite teaching types. She goes, "The last guy, he would teach us, and then he would make everyone leave the room, and you were in here with yourself with a dummy, and as you were doing CPR, he would have two other people come in and start screaming at you like they were the parents. Like, what are you doing to my child?" I was like, holy shit. That must have been so traumatic, man. Like, not the way to teach people how to do CPR. So, yeah. Crazy, man.
No, it isn't. And I've been in that situation. I still remember his name, soccer player. Ended up having a heart condition that nobody knew about. Mm-hmm. His doctors didn't know about it. His family didn't know about it. Fell over at practice. We get a call. Engine crew, we were first to show up. I was doing chest compressions for 15 minutes straight. PEA, right? Wow. You know, so we would see a pulse. I would stop. We would check. No, damn, you know, go right back on it.
Yeah.
Care flight showed up and took him. But his sister was there. She's the one that drove him to practice. Teenage sister. Drove him to practice and was waiting.
Oh, God.
You know, it goes back to what we said earlier. Yeah, we had a good team of professionals that knew how to manage that scene, had that situation, and was just talk to her like a person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's traumatic enough. You're not going to stop that, you know, but you certainly don't have to make it worse. So,
no.
And it wasn't as bad as what you said with that guy doing it. No. It was, you know, you're a professional. You should be able to do this. But oh my gosh, we could probably go on forever with, old stories like this stuff. But I think the honesty we need to bring to this type of topic when we're talking about like work in the workplace, we're asking, you know, regular workers to look after their coworkers if they got everything from a splinter to, you know, God forbid, their hand in a machine.
Yeah.
You know, that's just going to be nasty. You know, most people don't see those types of injuries. And we're asking them to be that first line, like you said, before you show up.
Yeah.
Somebody else should have been doing something to stabilize that scene, that situation, so that you can take it from there. And that's the whole point of first aid, right? Until help arrives. So I think bringing realism and humor and improving the way we train is incredible. Where can people go to find more information about that training, the comedy CPR course?
Yeah, so if they Google patented, so it's PATTONDCPR, you'll find me. If you also Google comedy CPR, I tend to come up as well. So, but it's all, you know, me, Jason Patton, and you can go on there. I do travel if necessary, but I think the end goal is I want to do a series. I want to do a or like, you know, a little tour around the United States, do like 10 shows, you know, pack it with whatever, even if it's 500 people and just teach 500 people at a time how to do CPR, but all through comedy. So yeah, you can Google me comedy CPR or patented comedy CPR and check out what we got going on.
Awesome. And of course, as always, check out Fire Department Coffee as well. Great stuff there. And I will also have links in the show notes for this episode to some of your videos. Some of them, I had to watch them several times because I couldn't stop laughing my dumb head off because I've been there, like the types of trainees, right? When you're training, that one. Well, what was the one you did on? Oh, it was a scene. You green screened yourself in the scene of like when the hose line went down or something. They lost water and they're all standing around trying to talk about what they're gonna do, and you're like, we got an engine out there with. Or, hey, how about that window right next to the victim? Who's
That one killed me, man. That one absolutely because like we're out of water. I'm like, there's 1,000 gallons. I could put an entire house out with 1,000 gallons, man, if you do it right, you know.
Right.
And then like, yeah, that window. But the best part was that the bottles were exploding. Like, what? Why are the bottles exploding? And then they're like, oh, the glass will go through your bunker gear.
Oh, the wine. The wine bottles were rupturing.
Wine bottles were rupturing.
But yet they're all standing around.
Yeah, like
full upright, standing around in like one of the room adjacent to that the room, having a conversation. Oh my God, it was just a riot. You killed me with that one. So I'll have links to your videos as well. And Jason, I can't say enough about you being willing to take some time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today. I know the safety pros I talk to are always looking to up their game when it comes to training and development and how we can transfer some of this knowledge to others. And starting with humor is a great way to go. So I appreciate it.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, brother.
All right. Once again, thank you so much, Jason. We will have all of the links to where you can find Jason online, as well as some of his videos, in the show notes and also on the blog post for this episode. And if you want to have a discussion about what Jason is talking about, how we as safety pros can improve our safety training and interject a little bit of humor and share your stories with this topic, head on over to the Safety Pro Podcast community. Premium members will be able to interact with each other as well as with myself in that community. So always look forward to seeing you out there. So please consider becoming a Safety Pro Podcast community premium member and interact with us today. And I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast episode.